And here we go.
Sox for the win!
Hello, friends. Welcome back into another episode of the D1 and Done Pod. This episode brought to you by the official Mountain West and SEC correspondent, the benefactors of the pod, the Hagen Hall Boys. Make sure you give us a follow on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. We are also now on YouTube. We are on TikTok. You can find us anywhere on social media. Many thanks to producer Jake for getting us pushed out there. We've had some fun interactions with some people, including that one BYU fan that wrote an entire novel telling us why the Cougars were going to beat VCU, which, by the way, he was correct.
He also edited it three times.
Did he really?
Yeah. It was edited three times, which is my favorite.
That's even better. So this is our Sweet 16 preview pod. I'm Robbie Donahoe. With me, Nick Mills, Dusty Mills, and producer Jake Mills along for the ride. We will get you all set and ready to roll. To be a great weekend of college basketball as we enter into the Sweet 16 round of the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. And we are excited to officially announce that all of us will have boots on the ground for Friday night at Lucas Oil Stadium. So it is going to be a great time. We want to give a shout out to Brian Mills for
our executive
being the yes. He's the true benefactor of the pod, let's be honest. It's not the Hagen Hall Boys, it's Brian Mills. So we're looking forward to some great times with friends and family along the ride. And I assume there will be pain and misery afoot. But as long as we have the friends around, it's all about the memories we make along the way. So, fellas, we are going to preview each game of the Sweet 16. We're going to make our picks. And then after that, we'll kind of preview what's to come after that. So we might as well start with our first game of Thursday night, which is tonight when we are recording this pod. Get your track shoes ready for BYU and Alabama. The Crimson Tide, a 4.5-point favorite, according to ESPN Bet, and the total is 75.5, which means they are looking at what's, I guess, like an 89-85 kind of game, which I think would track with kind of how both these teams are playing. So I actually want to start with Dusty. Dusty being our resident Crimson Tide man, how are we feeling about Alabama coming into tonight?
I felt good about all week. I'm starting to have kind of doubts about it. BYU is just playing so well, and they won 11 of 12, and their only loss was to Houston. Alabama, I did not realize since February 1st, actually has a top 30 defense, so that's good. They're kind of bringing that back just to form. In the end, I do think that Bama has too many weapons, and I said this for our tournament preview. I feel like these are the type of games they always seem to lose in the tournament. But I won't obviously make my pick yet. And I would also say BYU is very similar to Kentucky, who Bama has handled all year. So a lot of pros and cons.
I agree. I think BYU is one of the few teams that can match with Alabama's size that goes along with their speed. Because, like, Cliff Amore is not your prototypical big guy. And Kevin Keita is a guy that can do just about anything that Cliff Amore can. So it's a fascinating matchup between pace, but also I think the guards are really what's going to kind of set the tone for this game. How can Alabama slow down Richie Saunders, and how can BYU kind of slow down Mark Sears? Now, Mark Sears has been kind of a mixed bag. He's been really good some games, and then other games he gets – which what point guard gets into foul trouble consistently? Like, Mark Sears is the only point guard I can remember in recent memory that has trouble with, like, fouling. I don't know why, but
– and falling.
So, Nick, where are we leaning right now?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned the stars, because that was one of my first main points I want to throw out, is the story of Mark Sears and Richie Saunders, each team's stars. Because you mentioned they're kind of two ships passing night right now. So I have the stats right here for you. Mark Sears, in his last five games, averaging 13 points per game. And four of the five games, he scored 13 or less. He scored 22 against Robert Morris. And I'm saying most of those points came in the second half, too. So really, he's played, you know, nine not very great halves in the last five games. Whereas Richie Saunders' last 10 games, he scored 22 or more in 6 of 10 games, and double digits in the 4 other games. So he's been, that's about a month and a half now he's been balling out. And in that same stretch, also too, Grant Nelson, I He looked good, I thought, last week. Obviously, he barely played against Robert Morris, but he looked pretty good against St. Mary's, so he's the other star to watch out for. The other thing we mentioned, you mentioned about Saunders playing well is BYU's played well. So they're 11-1 since February 11th. They rank fourth at Bartovic in that span. That's how good they've been in that stretch. Where, and then on Bama on the other side, they're in an interesting spot because in the last nine games, they've only lost to Florida or lost on buzzer beater. So, like, is that like Florida just has their number and they're playing well, or are they just kind of up and down? So, to me, those kind of things I'm looking at, is it like, is BYU hot right now? Bama's kind of just middling. Is BYU's game? Or, again, Bama looked great in round 32 as well. And maybe Mark Sears is due for a big game. So I just think those are the main things to look out for in this game.
He's been such an odd player just recently. I think Alabama's kind of been winning in spite of him. And I think it's most of it has kind of been, dare I say, I know he's kind of been the main threat for them, but LeBaron Filon's been awesome. Mm-hmm. Aiden Holloway has been great. Like, those two guys have really provided a punch offensively that they needed because Mark Sears has really kind of fallen off on that front. So, yeah, I can kind of go either way here. BYU's just playing so damn well right now. And it just – they're honestly – they look like Alabama from last year where they just have no conscience. They're just going to chuck up as many shots as they can. And it doesn't matter if it's in transition. It doesn't matter if it's after an offensive rebound. I get the feeling that if Alabama plays their best, I'm not sure BYU can win. But I don't know if we're going to get Alabama's best. Jake, what do we think?
I think this Bama team has been – I mean, for the most part, all year, they've been kind of below the standard of what they were going to be, right? They were going to the Final Four last year. They have this, you know, massive offensive powerhouse of a squad, but they've been underwhelming. And I think it's more of the approach to this team all year has been looking at them maybe a little better than they are. You know, kind of like the girl that's in a, you know, she goes to a smaller school, so she appears to be more attractive, which is, I guess, maybe not the right example. If you're a Marion 8, you're an IU 4. That's how it's worked. But it's weird because they've been the SEC where they've kind of been able to sweep by in these scenarios. But BYU is damn good. I don't think people understand that. I don't think people realize that even as a six seed, I think they were very underseeded as a six seed. They will attack you at all levels. They have shown that they will find multiple ways to score. And more importantly, this is a game of who's going to outrun the other. Does he overhit? Most likely. I already bet it, by the way. I also have BYU plus 5.5. But I'm very excited to watch this first half because once the second half kind of kicks off, I personally will be not as locked in as my Gators will be tipping off. Mm. But I'm really excited. I think the biggest factor is can Grant Nelson be a bigger factor than he's been since that game against Florida in the first half of the SEC tournament, where he was the sole reason I thought the Gators were going to get beat. He gets hurt, he goes out, and since then he hasn't been that massive factor yet. But for the most part, if he can kind of instill his will, and then I think it's going to matter of fact of two, if Nate Oates knows how to stop Richie Saunders or not. That's kind of my key factors of the game. But I got BYU winning this game and moving on to the Elite Eight.
I got a key factor for you. Aaron Judge, 0-1 on the season.
Must have loved me, Lord.
That's gosh. So you'll remember that the adjusted shot quality was my favorite stat from 2 years ago. Both BYU and Alabama are exact same number, 0.32.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's a dead even race. And the numbers have even kind of pointed towards Alabama having good fortune in terms of like Alabama's getting better shots, but not making them, while BYU getting just as good shots, but making them more consistently. It's kind of an interesting spot to be in. The quality of shot that BYU got against Wisconsin was extraordinary. Like, the amount of open threes they got from their offense was incredible. And they really weren't running that, like, complicated stuff. It was just either simple ball screen action, cut and replace. Like, it was simple stuff. So it's I'm kind of with you. I think with how well BYU is playing, I don't know if Alabama's size can actually match up with the bodies that BYU can throw at them, whether it's Fu Traore or whether it's Keba Keita. Like, those guys are big. They're big, broad dudes. I have Alabama in my final four, but I actually think BYU is going to win. Nick, what do you think?
Well, real quick, I want to say, Robbie, yeah, on that point is, when's the last time Bama wowed you? When's the last time Bama came into a game and at the end of the game you're like, holy shit, that team looked incredible? I've seen BYU do it three or four times in the past month, and I think Bama hasn't gotten to that point yet.
You truthfully, honestly, the last time that that Alabama wowed me was against North Carolina in the Sweet 16 last year. That was the last time.
Well, how about boys through the last game against Auburn regular season? They did go into Auburn, got a big win there.
But that was kind of Auburn's tail slide a little bit, I think, at the end of the season. No, but yes, you are right. Yes.
No, I also agree. That's like the one time they've wowed in the last, I don't know.
And if they didn't wow you then that's a bigger issue.
For sure. Yeah. But shout out BYU, the first Sweet 16 since Jimmer Fredette, for you youngsters out there. Because we're getting old. We're getting old.
Look up Jimmer's highlights. Look up his highlights. It's still, I cannot believe some of the shots he was making in that Gonzaga game.
If you don't know who Jimmer is, you're too young to watch this show.
He was really killing Clark for Caleb Clark. This is where I think the train runs out of steam for BYU. I love Alabama in this game. I kind of, we were told just now, they've not played that A-plus game in a while, other than maybe at Auburn. 11-1 the last 12 games, BYU. No more. Soak it in, Bama wins and covers.
Dusty?
The difference in the game is going to be BYU's inability to defend Alabama's quick guards on the pick and roll. I think Alabama pulls around late and covers.
And Mohamed Diabate's double digits last four games. Watch out for him, too.
Diabate is a big key. He needs to play big inside against BYU's strength at the rim. So I agree. I'll still take BYU. I'll be honest, I think with it being the first game, I think the under has a better chance of hitting because there's going to be some nerves on both ends. So
first half unless, under.
Yes, first half under, I would be hitting that one hard, to be honest with you. So we're split kind of across the board there. But again, I will be rooting for Alabama. I want them. They were one of my final four teams, so I'm looking forward to that. Let's go over to the West region that starts us off with Maryland and Florida. Florida, 6.5-point favorite. Jake's Gators, the team to beat in this one. You can go watch that game, by the way, for $51 at the Chase Center in San Francisco. Heck of a deal. Wow. The team total, 156.5. So that means we're kind of looking at like a 82-76.
79, 77,
somewhere around like that. So well, both teams will get in the 70s. That's what we're pretty safe. So let's start with our resident Gator. How are we feeling tonight?
I feel really good. There is a lot of turmoil going on in the interpretory, as some might say. Scott Van Pelt, I'm going to be reaching out after this game. We are going to stick it to the Terps tonight. Florida is going to come out ready to roll. They've had a week off to prepare for Queen, and I think we actually match up pretty well with them. You know, Queen outside hitting. Yeah, they got guards. Of course, you don't get to the Sweet 16 without having guys that can play. But being surrounded by him, I think we have two, three, four different guys in our back or front court. Yeah, front court. I always mess that up. In our front court that can go at him and go head to head, where he's going to see different looks throughout a game. So if he starts to kill up front, we can throw a different body out there. And I really think that the Gators are, you know, again, going to take care of business. They've shown to me all year that they're going to find whether it's Walt in Walt Madness, whether it is Will Richard or even Elijah Martin, who's been in this kind of place before, one of them is going to step up and hit enough shots where we can kind of get out to an early lead and then control and web the storm from there. So I feel really good about the Gators tonight. Of course, the nerves are flowing to not bite these words, but no, I'm excited to advance on and kind of see who comes out of that other team in the West region as well.
Does Alex Condon guard Reese and then Chinyelu on Derek Queen, or is it going to be – I feel like that's where the game – I know the guards are going to be important, but I think
– No, I think that's the matchup. The matchup to start for sure. Okay. And especially just throw someone at Queen, like a Chinyelu, where Do I think he's the best matchup for Queen? No. Do I think he's the one early that's saying you're not going to run through this brick wall and get your confidence rolling? Yes. And that's where I think, you know, Golden's going to put Chin Liu out there first on it just to say, hey, you know, we're going to make sure that nothing's easy for you. And if you get him in foul trouble, then we can switch off. But just like with last game, I think Tommy Halleck off the bench is going to play a massive role in tonight's game with energy, with rebounding, as well as double team down and help. I think they're going to send a lot. You know, you've seen some teams do it recently where they send that double team off the baseline where if someone catches a block, instead of coming up or digging down, they're going to send it off the block. So if he tries to spin baseline, there's a second guy there. And now we're going to make them rotate the ball around the wing, which is like something that I don't think they really like to do. So, but no, I feel great about the Gators coming in and, you know, keep up the good pace. And, you know, if you, as always, you go score, good things happen. But if you're going to try to win this game on the defensive end to start, I think it's going to be trouble. So go out there and hit them in the mouth early like we've done for multiple games in a row.
You mentioned the drama surrounding Maryland. We do want to let all of you know that Kevin Willard in his press conference yesterday was basically straight up asked, are you being considered for the Villanova job or whatever that may be, in not so uncertain terms? And his answer was straight up, we have to find a way to stop Walter Clayton. He didn't even answer the question. He just went straight, just direct on not even talking about the question, which I honestly think that's going to work against Maryland. I think that's why McNeese was so successful to start was Will Wade didn't hide behind the fact that he's going to NC State. He's talked to NC State. I think this is going to be much more of a mental factor for Maryland now that their head coach isn't full on saying, hey, this is what's happening. Because I think even the football coach, Mike Loxley, came out and said that wasn't the right way to handle how he's been handling it, Kevin Willard. So it's just an odd situation, but I think the drama is going to work against Maryland here. So, Dusty, what do we think about Florida and Maryland's matchup tonight?
Florida's got to rebound and get down and run and transition. Try making a quick game, lots of possessions. I think rebounding will be huge, and I do think the depth, I'll make my pick yet, ultimately is a huge factor. Queen and Reese both have to be, I would say, 25 is probably a lot, but with the how, you know, much Florida can score, they might have to score 23 to 27 apiece. Florida's the better team. Maryland is good. They're some of our darlings, right? We were feeling good about them to start the tournament. And it's intriguing, though, because both teams had their scare. This easily could have been UConn, Colorado State, which
that'd be a sad day.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's, I think the key, if Maryland wants to have a chance, Gillespie, Rice, Selton, Miguel, those guys have to put up a bunch of threes and make them. That's, I think that's really their only path to victory, in my opinion. I think Reese and Queen, I think they're going to kind of be, and they're going to cancel each other out with how good Florida's bigs are in defending inside. So it's going to really come down to how those three guards from Maryland can score. Nick, you've been a believer in Maryland from the start. Where are we thinking? How are the Terps' chances?
I'm going to reiterate a lot of things you said already. Again, the whole Willard thing is so bizarre to me. He probably handled this about as poor as he probably could handle this. So shout out to him.
Isn't he the one who had like an encounter with a player last year too? In the middle
there was
of a game.
Something last year. So who's handled their situation worse? Kevin Willard with this or IU with their coaching search?
Kevin Willard with this because it was so self-inflicted.
Okay, fair enough.
It was so self-inflicted. But no, it's a legit question though.
Well, hold on. We can push back on that a little bit. Couldn't you say that Willard maybe has told something to his team behind closed doors and said he's going to handle this the media in a different way?
Yeah, possibly. But that just doesn't seem like his style.
That's a good point.
I think that would absolutely be the way to handle it because I think as a coach, it's kind of up to you to basically, you know, throw all your arrows at me. Like, let me be the guy that takes all the pressure off of you. But it doesn't feel like Kevin Willard's that kind of guy to let that happen. So anyway, but Nick, back to you. Sorry, I know we got off track there.
No, actually, we should be talking about because it's a headline that should not be. But Crab hit on some things I want to hit it on. Florida and Maryland won by combined 3 points last round. They both got their scare, like you mentioned. He mentioned the rebounding. Colorado State out rebounded Maryland 39-29, and as Jake knows, they can crash the boards pretty well down there in Gainesville. The other thing I had not noticed till doing my research, because again, I do my homework. No big deal. Florida averages 85 points per game. Maryland's not giving up 85 in a game this year. So can Maryland's defense actually, like, wow, do it? So, so could that, Maryland probably has to hold them to 70.
They haven't given up 85 in a game. That's crazy, yeah, to think about.
I'm looking double check. I went through. I'm pretty sure 82, 81 is the most they've given up all year.
I'll check right now. I'm but checking. That's, I mean, yeah, that sounds right. I mean, it's.
I'm pretty. Either way, their defense has been good all year. So, again, probably 70, 75, probably the range they have to get to in this game. But
they gave up 83 to Purdue. It looks like that's the highest number, is 83.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's the kind of story. Can Maryland's defense prevail? And, but again, Maryland's strength, they have two big men down low. Florida can throw so many tall white guys at them. Plus,
Sonny White.
Plus, Ruben. No depth for Maryland. Shout out to Crab 5. I love him so much, but I just love his Florida matchup for him so much. Plus, all the drama off the court. I might pick Florida in the cover in this game.
It feels like a bad matchup across the board. It really does. So I'm with you. I think Florida's got the win. I think they've got the cover. I know Jake's picking Florida. Dusty, are we sticking with Florida too?
The Crab 5 turns into the Crap 5. Florida by double digits.
Whoa.
Oh, sorry, Jake. We're all taking Florida to cover. Sorry about that. Jake, pick Maryland.
No.
Okay. Just trying to help you.
I will take the under, though. Know that Nick just said that.
There you go. Okay.
Well, you know.
Let's go to the evening games tonight. Arizona-Duke will start us at approximately 9:39 p.m. on CBS. Can Caleb Love be the devil in the side of the Duke Blue Devils once again? I guess I'll let Nick start because his man crush could possibly do it one more time here.
Robbie is so perfect we have this. He's been one of our biggest talking points of the pod this year, the whole Caleb Love experience, and it's been the full Caleb Love experience. And it is so perfect. Once again, he's matched up with Duke. Arizona Duke, by the way, how many times – this is only the third time I played each other in a tournament. I would have guessed so many
ever?
More. Yeah, 97 Natty, no, 01 Natty, excuse me.
Yeah, 01 Natty, yeah.
And then the 2011 Derek Williams beating Kyrie Irving game. I swear it was more
than
that.
That's it?
That's what someone tweeted. I could not believe it. It feels like it should be so much more than that. So, and also, see, play each other early in the year, Duke won by double digits at Arizona. But it's Caleb Love. It's, you know, he's gonna get his shots up. He has a little smirk after the game. If he wins this game, again, big if, Duke's been one of the two best teams all year and Arizona's been up and down, he truly can go in some college basketball lore all of a sudden. If he knocks out Coach K, Paolo Banchero, and now Cooper Flagg at two different schools with all the 2-for-24 appearance or shoot performances in between, I'm so excited. I cannot wait. Please, Caleb. I said last pod, I'm buying your jersey. I mean that wholeheartedly. Please do it.
There will be a GoFundMe launched for a statue in Durham of Caleb Love. I don't care if it's on the – we have to go right after the property line of on Tobacco Road, right after the, you know, the jurisdiction ends. But I will be –
You mean
–
oh, wait. You, Chapel Hill, not Durham.
Jake wants to put it right on Durham.
Love. No, I want to put – I want to put it in Durham.
Oh, okay, because he owns Duke. Okay, I got you.
Or we put it like you are now entering – Caleb Love territory, and like you put it like again right on the outside of the property line, so that way the Duke fans can't do anything about it. But I want to put a statue. It will look better than Dwayne Wade, don't worry.
Not saying much.
I would hope
is it too much for us to pull a Harvey Updike and just go to Durham and just storm Krzyzewskiville and burn it?
We don't condone arson in any form or fashion, so let's not do that.
Let me tell you what I did.
I will
follow
say,
me follow me to freedom.
Back in my day.
They put a Scam Newton jersey on Bear Bryant's statue.
I'll tell you what I did, Paul. And then Feinbaum's like, is that legal? I don't know.
We'll find out.
R.I.P. Harvey Updike.
R.I.P.
I think Caleb Love is at his best when his expectations are low. When he gets more hype, when he gets more people talking about him, more people watching him, more people expecting him to put up big numbers and big points, that's when he struggles. So what he needs to do, he needs to play within the game He doesn't need to go off and do Caleb Love stuff where he's jacking up random shots.
That's how he wins.
I know, but that's where – that's when
a lot of people are watching the 2022 Final Four, Robbie. A lot of eyeballs in that game weren't there.
Yes, but then he looked terrible against Kansas. So I think if he keeps his shot total, his shot attempts, 15 or under, I actually like Arizona's chances. I love the Arizona cover. I will be honest. 9.5. I think Arizona matches up really well with Duke. Way better than people will actually give them credit for. So will they win? I don't think so. But I think Arizona covers it. It's 9.5. Like, that's a big number.
It's going up.
And Arizona has played very well in this tournament. Outside of the first 5-6 minutes against Oregon, they've been great since then. So I like the cover. I think Duke will win close. But ultimately, I think this game is going to come down to what Caleb Love does. If he handles himself, if he doesn't fall victim to the hype and, oh, I got to go beat Caleb Love, he'll be fine. It comes down to, honestly, if I was Duke, I would just let their worst defender guard him and just let him shoot as many times as he wants and just let him try to be Superman.
Oh, come on.
Until you're down 27-0 with 9 straight threes to start the game.
I will say he's getting more support than he did in that Oregon game. The supporting cast is not good either. They need to be much better.
But they need to be maybe a lot better.
I agree with your sentiment, though, Robbie.
Dusty, what are we thinking tonight for Duke and Arizona?
I don't think Arizona can get down early. That's my only fear for them. And then Caleb Love starts really pressing. Duke's the better team. We all know that. Speaks for itself. Flagg would be the best player on the floor on paper. I mean, you guys have said all year, it is the Caleb Love game. And this is just incredible that they're playing again in the Sweet 16. Do you guys think that Kay likes wakes up of night sweats and he just sees like Caleb Love's little grimace on his face?
He's sleeping and you see like there's a figure at the door, but there's not actually a figure at the door.
It's like Coach a silhouette of him shooting.
Yes. Coach K just sees Caleb Love in that North Carolina number 2 jersey and like making a weird smirk.
Like when Peter Rosenberg wakes up in the end of the episode from the end of the This Is Why Duke Sucks videos and he's like looking around and it's just Caleb Love.
Well, what's funny, him having night terrors or him watching like Caleb Love go 2 of 12 versus Oregon State on a January night? Like, this is the guy who killed me?
Yeah,
that's a good one. Did it?
Well said. Well put. Jake, do we – Arizona or Duke tonight?
I have a soul, so I'm never, ever, ever going to say Duke's going to win publicly. I am betting on Arizona plus 9.5. I don't feel necessarily very confident about it, but I am betting on them plus 9.5, and I am hoping for one hell of a Thursday night in celebration of Duke going down.
So all of us are taking Duke then, I would assume, Nick?
Yeah, one thing I want to add, Malik Brown might play in this game is what they announced, so that's something to look out for.
Ooh. And, I didn't see that.
Didn't know that.
One question I want to ask the pod. So Arizona is averaging 90 a game in the tournament so far. Should they try to slow it down against Duke? Should they try to be like, screw it, we're scoring 100 this game?
No, slow it down. You don't want to get up and down with Duke because they've got the guards to push the pace. And they're just so smart. And Con Knipl transition threes, you're playing with fire if you want to do that. Arizona needs to slow the pace down. They got to play in the half court. They can't get up and down with this team. Proctor got his crazy game out of the way, so you're in good shape there because he did it last year too. So if Arizona can play slow, and I totally agree with Dusty, if Arizona gets down early, like what they did against Oregon, they're not coming back. This is a completely different team. So, yeah, totally agree on that front. Okay.
Caleb Love wins. They upset tonight. I have to say it. One last time, going out the ship. Caleb Love one more time. And then they get smoked
in the game. That's going to put BYU in the Final Four. That's all I want.
Deal. Wow. Whatever it takes. One more time.
Part of the ship, part of the crew. I like it. All right. To the evening, late night game. 10 seed, our only double-digit seed that made it into the Sweet 16, that is the Arkansas Razorbacks, led by none other than John Calipari, will take on the Texas Tech Red Raiders. That is a 10:09 p.m. tip time approximate. The game will be on TBS or True TV. Texas Tech, only a 5.5-point favorite. The total, 147.5. I will start with our resident John Calipari man, Dusty Mills. Does Arkansas keep the dream and the storybook run alive tonight?
Found a unique stat that's going to hurt Arkansas. Kansas's half-court offense is ranked outside the top 30. St. John's was outside the top 200. That's where Texas Tech wins this. Well, is capable of winning the game. It's just purely half-court offense. There is a chance the arrow plays for Arkansas. They have not ruled him out yet. So
he is playing. I was going to say. Yeah.
Okay, California announced it on Pat Mack yesterday.
I mean, Calipari is playing with straight house money right now. That this feels like a bad matchup for them. It's interesting, though, because talent-wise, you know, I would honestly say overall Arkansas may have more pure NBA talent. But it took them so long to gel all season. So maybe it isn't getting hot at the right time. Like I said, Cal's playing with house money. This team exceeded all of their expectations. You know, as a Cal fan, I'm fine with Arkansas winning this game. I know Big Blue Nation does not want him to go further in the tournament than Kentucky. So a lot riding on these next two nights. So just from the game standpoint, that's how I'll make a pick, but not right now.
Nick, does Arkansas have anyone that can guard JT Toppin?
Great question, Robbie. I don't think they do.
I don't either.
I think that is the story of the game, right? Is to me, who stars prevail, right? Because as Dusty mentioned, all the talent that Arkansas have, or the NBA talent, versus guys like Darian Williams, McMillan, and of course JT Toppin on Texas Tech, to me is truly like who stars prevail in this game. And real quick, some big picture nuggets. First of all,
I love nuggets. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wendy's has the best nuggets of fast food.
Oh, they just say shout out Jake.
Spicy.
Former Southwest Conference foes, Texas Tech and Arkansas, 40-40 against each other all time. So shout out to them on that. And we'll see. This is the first time in John Calipari's career he is a 10 seed and so fun, or double digit seed, and of course the only one left. And finally, shout out Texas
Tech.
This
is the first time he's been a double digit seed.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Crazy, because I mean, I figured at some point he would have been one at UMass or Memphis, but no, okay. Interesting.
I thought the same thing, Robbie. And last one, shout out Texas Tech. I think they consider themselves a football school, I believe. Third Sweet 16 since 2019 with three different coaches. So shout out Mark Adams, got him there in 2022 as well. So Texas Tech's become quite the basketball program, but to me, to circle back, JD Toppin and all versus like Nellie Davis and DJ Flag, or sorry, combined names, DJ Wagner and guys like that are the story of the game.
Texas Tech has quickly become one of the more well-rounded athletics programs in the country.
Yes.
Because obviously their football team has been good before. They've been okay recently, not exceptional.
Patrick
obviously, their men's basketball team has obviously been extraordinary. Their baseball team has been
always been good.
They got some good and if you have no idea where Lubbock, Texas is, you are correct because no one else does either. It is out in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing around it, and yet Lubbock is the center of what is a proud athletics program that is going to have a team in the Elite Eight come tonight. Because I don't see any way that Arkansas can first off handle JT Toppin. Second off, you also got to worry about Chance McMillan, Elijah Hawkins. Those are guys. And you mentioned Darion Williams as well, Nick. That's another tough matchup for Arkansas. The return of Adu Thiero is going to be very important because he's Arkansas's best defender by far. And they need someone like that to count on in those moments. I don't see how they're going to match up with JT Toppin, because if you double him in the post, then they're going to kick it out to Chance McMillan, Elijah Hawkins. Those guys are great shooters. So Texas Tech just has too many bodies, in my opinion. I just don't see. I think the magic runs out here for Arkansas. What was the line again on this? 5.5, I think.
Is this game in Atlanta, right?
No, it's San Fran. It's your region.
So basically,
that's what I meant.
5.5. I would probably say Texas Tech covers. I think they're going to win outright. But yeah, Jake, what do you think?
Two things on this real quick, I should have prefaced this by saying at the beginning, but I've watched a couple shows this week. Not going to name these people. I actually wish I would have left them up on here. But can we stop? I had some people asking, is the NCAA tournament ruined because there's no Cinderella story? I'm sorry. When was the last time we had a 10 seed in the NCAA Sweet 16 and not consider that a Cinderella? I don't care about the talent. I don't care about the conference that they're in. That is a double-digit seed going against the number one 3 seed tonight in the West region. And people are acting like this tournament is dead and this tournament is ruined because of NIL and everything like that. So I at least wanted to get that off my chest to say, quit freaking complaining. You want buzzer beater and game winners? Don't ask for travels. You want upsets and Cinderellas? Then recognize when you have a double digit seed in the final 16. That is not supposed to happen. And guess what? We have it in front of us. So, with that all being said, it is hard. It is going to
love
be
that.
Very, love very, 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 very hard for me to say John Calipari isn't going to find a way to win this game in spite of Lexington, Kentucky. this is just teeing up exactly for what and again, I've lived with multiple Kentucky fans for many years. The struggles and the things that he has put them through with the lack of adjustments, lack of preparation, lack of game planning and in-game settings is why I think they get back past Texas Tech tonight, because I think maybe he has learned, especially the last 2 years. There's one thing that has been missing from this Calipari staff that he has not had for the last couple of years, and that is a guy by the name of Kenny Payne, who did not ever show that he can be a successful coach on his own. But you can take, champagne, it's not very good. You can take orange juice, it's not very good. You put them together, mimosas are delicious. That is Kenny Payne and John Calipari, and they get past Texas Tech tonight, advance the Elite Eight to face either Florida or Maryland here in the West.
You just called John Calipari and Kenny Payne the mimosa of college basketball.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, okay. I did.
Well, what's that make Brad Calipari?
He's the cork that gets shot out of there.
Brad's just the Bloody Mary because he's just the drink that no one likes, and he only is used one time a year.
Damn.
I did not think.
Was that too harsh? I'm sorry.
No, it actually kind of played. Maybe a smidge too harsh, but I think it played.
He's like the non-alcoholic beverage.
Come on,
mocktail.
Selective taste.
Actually, that's perfect. Brad Calipari is O'Doul's. He's always going to be there, and he's not going to do anything to help you.
And most people won't pick him.
Yes, correct.
Looks cool, though.
Yes. So, we all taking Texas Tech, or does anyone take Arkansas?
I'm taking Arkansas. I think Arkansas wins this game.
Jake said Arkansas. Yeah, Jake took Arkansas.
Cover and win, Jake, or just cover?
Win. They're going to win this game.
I believe in J.D. Toppin and Grant McCasklin. I've been Texas Tech's most underappreciated team in the country. This is not anti-Arkansas. It's more pro-Texas Tech. They cover.
Yeah, smart pick.
I'm taking Texas Tech.
Okay, I was going to say. All right, so there you go. There's our Thursday games. Friday games. All four of these games are great, I'll be honest. I can't pick one that I would take, that I would love over the other. Well, obviously there's one. With the 7:09 p.m. CBS game out in the South region in Atlanta, Ole Miss, Michigan State. Spartans are a 3.5-point favorite, the over-under 143.5. I was also listening to some pods and some shows earlier this week, Jake, that said that Ole Miss does not match up well with Michigan State. And that made me seriously? That's true?
For what reason?
Ole Miss can't rebound, which I don't know if I fully believe that, but I digress. I think this is an even matchup. It's going to depend on how much Ole Miss can get up by, if they even can. The second half is going to tell the story of this game. So, Nick, resident Spartan lover, tell me how Michigan State wins this game.
First of all, I kind of agree with you. I think it's a very... They're kind of designed the same way, right? I think the guard plays, they both had great guard play in Padula and, was it Brakefield? I always forget his name. Jalen Murray.
The big guy, but yeah, Murrell is also another one of good guards for Ole Miss.
On the wing. And then Michigan State has all their guards and Holloman, Fears, Richardson. And of course, two coaches who are pretty much, tournament coaches, right? This is a 2019 rematch, Chris Beard and 2019 Final Four rematch, I should say. Chris Beard and Tom Izzo. I think they always win in March, but, as a resident Spartan lover, I agree the rebounding is what sticks out for me. That's right. I think Michigan State can get Ole Miss. And again, they just keep coming at you. Ole Miss can get some low shooting. So can Michigan State, for that matter. But I think actually can get them there. And I'm very intrigued by because this game is in Atlanta. Is there going to be a lot of Ole Miss fans there? Or is there going to be more green there? I think I'm very fascinated to see that. I think Michigan State fans have been starving for this green to the Sweet 16. in 2022 or 2023. That was more of an underdog thing. I think it's going to be a lot of green. I think it's going to be a lot of fans there. I really like my Spartans in this game.
Well, I hope there's a lot of Ole Miss fans there because they're not going to attend there for any other sporting event. So they might as well go for basketball.
I hate to break it to you, but there's going to be a lot of green there because Ole Miss plays Florida at home in baseball tonight.
I think
about 95% of Ole Miss fans don't care about basketball. Someone who covered them and was around that program for nearly a decade, they care about football and baseball. Care about basketball. Now, when the basketball team is winning and doing well, they're obviously going to care and take an interest, but it would not shock me if that place is 70% green to start that game. Because what's the other matchup in that region?
Auburn.
Okay, well, there's probably going to be a whole lot more orange. I mean, and maybe a little bit more yellow.
I bet those Auburn fans are rooting their ass off for Ole Miss.
So here's the key. Here's the kicker.
Because well, Michigan fans are going to be rooting for Ole Miss. They're not going to root for Michigan State.
So there's going to be more Michigan fans there than you think because Michigan fans do travel well. There's going to be a lot of Auburn fans there. Both of those schools do not want to see Michigan State in the Elite Eight because Michigan does not want to lose to Michigan State in the Elite Eight, and Auburn, I think, would much rather see Ole Miss than Michigan State. So if the game is close, fans and the environment kind of start trickling towards how Ole Miss is playing. Michigan State feeds off of the environment. It was part of the reason why they made that run in Cleveland against New Mexico in the second half was because they had the environment on their side. That's where it could get interesting down the stretch if it's close because the environment will kind of tell the story of this game. Dusty?
I think randomly this is a game because of their styles of play that comes down to officiating. Foul trouble, Michigan State trying to get to the line. Ole Miss does play kind of a swarming type defense, especially aggressively. They defend pick and rolls almost differently, depending on who it is. So I don't want it to come down to officiating. I think cheap fouls or foul trouble could get either team. Correct me if I'm wrong, I actually feel Ole Miss may be slightly deeper, but not as talented, which has kind of been one of the things we're going to. Just the bodies they can throw at you. I this whole Jace Richardson story is very, very cool for Michigan State. I saw a picture of Izzo or Tom March with him and then with his dad 25 years ago. So I think this is kind of just a random matchup. Do we know if they ever played in school history?
I'm sure they have at some point, but
maybe the Outback Bowl.
Honestly, it could be in college football. That's a good point. This is Ole Miss's first time in the Sweet 16 since 2001, just their second time ever. They've been close before and just haven't really gotten over the top. So, Jake, what way are you leaning?
I believe Michigan State's going to pull out this game. This just sounds like an Izzo slugfest. I like, Dusty, that you brought up the fact that it's going to come down to, I think, a few key plays, whether that's officiating, whether that is someone has hit a big shot. Maybe you have a 45% free throw shoot the line. It's going to knock down 4-4. It's going to be something of that nature where you're like, damn, we can pinpoint the moment that this game kind of flipped or this game was decided. But this is a game that I think Izzo goes and wins. And if it doesn't, Robbie, I'll have a drink poured for us to celebrate our, you know, as I like to say, you're never wrong. We were just early on predicting predicting that the Spartans would fall short this year, but they've gotten my respect in the last couple of weeks as well as yours, and I think that this is a game that 100% they should go out and win. They take care of business. But at the end, it is Chris Beard, and it is March. It is someone who continues to prove, no matter where it's, what's across the chest, I'm going to find a way to put my team in a position to win. But I do think Michigan State wins this game in a slugfest. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to be ugly, but it is going to be – it is going to be gritty down the stretch, and this is what March is all about.
I would tend to agree, and I think the one area that not enough people talk about is how Michigan State defends the post. And Izzo is stubborn to a fault with this. He does not double the post. He's going to play face-up one-on-one every single time in the post. It's why Purdue had so much success over the last few years because they dumped it in, let Zach Edey do whatever he wants against Michigan State. Ole Miss does not have a guy that can really back you down and play in the post. I know Dia and Brakefield are kind of their big guys, but they're not real true reliable guys that can go back to the basket. So I actually hate I'm going to say this. I really like Michigan State. I think they cover, but if it's close, it's going to get weird late. So, Dusty, are you taking Ole Miss or Michigan State?
Oh, I found it real quick. Michigan State 0-1 all. Oh no, 1-0 all time against Ole Miss. I do not know the year though. I'm taking Michigan State as well.
1914.
I'm trying to find it.
Nick obviously will be taking Ole Miss to cover and win.
I will say I think Michigan State wins, but I think Ole Miss covers though. I think this can be a.
Is this still at three?
Yeah, 3.5.
I think Michigan State by 2. I think it's gonna be a close game. But I do trust Michigan State's guards just a smidge more. Can I read you guys this Tom Izzo quote from today real quick?
I saw this. Go ahead.
Quote, once you win a national championship, winning a tournament game means nothing. It doesn't turn me on. Close quote.
Oh, yeah.
So the lights are not going to be too bright for Sparty. They're going to be too bright for Ole Miss. Sparty wins but doesn't cover.
What does turn Tom on?
That's a good question. That's what not I was wondering, April. Too.
Ooh.
I think a close, intimate relationship with a point guard, that really gets him going. You can just see it on the sideline, yeah.
Whether it's Kalen Spartan on
Kalen Lucas, Cassius Winston, whoever that may be, he loves those relationships.
What, do you think you used to call him Mateen Cleavage?
What
was Butler's first name for West Virginia when Huggins and him made out?
Deshaun Butler.
Thank you, Deshaun Butler. I imagine that is how Izzo recruits his point guards every year. And I think it was a Big Cat, Nick, that said that, you know, it's like these point guards come made in a factory for him where they have this like stocky, they have the stocky build, this thick white headband.
Yeah. Always so thick.
Oh, it just, they're, like I said, they're made in a factory, but made in the lab.
Embarrassing. Let's stay in that region and then we'll save our teams for last. Let's preview Michigan and Auburn. That's the 9:39 PM game in the South region. Auburn, 9.5-point favorite against Michigan. Jake, you've been saying it from the beginning that it's tough to defend 2 7-footers. Can Auburn defend 2 7-footers at a time coming up tonight? Or coming up Friday night, I should say.
I don't know what it was about this Michigan team that made me inclined, because I do not like watching them play by any means. I don't necessarily like rooting for them. But there is something about this double 7-footer giant, that they have, that it is hard to, you know, just navigate throughout a game. It's hard to game plan around it. And I think if there's anything that Auburn has shown the last month and a half, is they don't give a shit about game planning. They don't care about finding a way to stop and take advantage of the weakness of the team that they're going to be playing against. They're just going to impose their will, and they strut around. And this is kind of what Bruce Pearl's built himself upon when he was at Tennessee and now at Auburn. But it's going to strut around upon is that we our shit don't stink and we're better than you and we're going to go impose our will. And I think that's going to run into a brick wall here on Friday night. It is going to be a battle. Auburn should pull this game out. I love Michigan to cover based on just kind of what they have. And, I mean, this team finishes the regular season by getting slapped by Tom Izzo and Michigan State. And then they haven't lost a game since. So where am I the one to say that postseason ball for them isn't kind of some type of adrenaline high and some kind of rush that is going to allow them to keep moving forward? But I think Michigan is more than ready to go take down Auburn, when I think a lot of teams this year have been scared to play Auburn. And I think they're ready to go, you know, kind of give them their big right hook and see what happens.
I think Michigan matches up with Auburn way better than people realize. Their guards, Michigan's guards are best that I've seen in keeping people in front of you off the dribble. And I don't understand how. They're so good at keeping guards in front of them.
Great Z drill.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. They just work on Z drill every single practice. But Trey Donaldson, Scotty Gale, like those dudes, like they all guard so well. And that's Auburn's best offense, is when they can get guys downhill and kick out for shots or get to the rim. You have Michigan with a 7-footer that can protect the rim. You have guards that can do just enough, Namari Burnett as well, in transition from three. I am with you, Jake. I actually love the Michigan cover. Love it, which is probably why they won't. But I think it's people are already trying to claim that, oh, Auburn's the better team, yada, yada. I have fallen into this trap of not liking these Big Ten teams for far too long. It ends tonight and this weekend where – I think Michigan's going to keep this game close, and if it stays close at the end, Michigan wins close games. It would not surprise me in the least if they find a way to win this one. Nick, what do we think?
three things I'm looking for in this game. One, you've already mentioned 2 7-footers. Do they play Broom and Cardwell a lot together this game? Do they try to go big for big with them?
Yes, or they have to.
Do they play a Chaney Johnson? Is it Chaney Johnson? I always forget his first name. Do they try and go a smaller look on them? I think I agree. I think they will go 2 7. They will do play Cardwell and Broom together.
Johnson, I forgot about him. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I'm very intrigued by that. Also, speaking of 7-footers, I think Vlad Golden and his antics versus Chad Baker-Mazar and his antics could be very interesting. And what makes you feel good about Auburn's game is kind of like we talked about Alabama earlier. I mean, Auburn's 3-3 in the last 6 games. They've not really played their – great, the last 10 minutes crazy, they're really good. They've not played their – you know, play their A-plus games. They play Kentucky and Rupp Arena, and they show off the second half on CBS, so – I think that's what's scary for Michigan, because when they lose, as we talk about, they get their money's worth. They lose by 74 points when they lose. So
yeah,
I think that's the worry. That's why I kind of lean Auburn's, that we've not had an A game yet. But again, I'm with you guys too. There's a lot of reasons to love Michigan, because if it is close late, you feel good about them. And again, there's just such a weird matchup with the 2 7-footers. And Roddy Gale, if he plays like that again in the last round, they're one of the best teams in the country. So that's kind of what I'm looking at in this SEC Big Ten matchup.
Yeah, I don't foresee Roddy Gale ever doing that again for the rest of his life. But, you know, I could be wrong. Who knows? Dusty, what do we think about this matchup?
I think Auburn's playing on eggshells right now. Faltering late in the season, I think, is kind of sticking to them. I think Broome has kind of struggled his last 5 or 6 games compared to the rest of the year. But I'm feeling a huge game by our fan of the show, Baker Mazzara. Michigan fans are going to hate him by the time this game is over. A guy I work with, he's a big Michigan fan, who's asking about Auburn today. And I said, there's a guy with a hyphenated name. Just go look him up, because I promise you'll be cussing him out with about 5 minutes left in the game. And he's a
5 minutes to start the game.
Yeah,
or 5 minutes to start the game. Pettiford, I like in this situation, just his ability to get through defenses and get to the rim. I'm excited for this one. Should be a really fun game. There's hell, you never know after this. They may be calling him Dusty March if he can keep on these runs. But in the meantime, I like Auburn. What's the spread like? Probably 7?
9.5.
9.5.
I hate that you just said that.
When you throw Michigan, tomatoes at him, when he finds some way.
And I think Auburn will win a game they need. I'm going to say they even pull away late and win by 12. Cover.
Okay. So Auburn covers, gets the win. I say Auburn wins, Michigan covers. Nick?
Auburn wins and covers. I think this is when Michigan loses, like I mentioned, they lose. So Auburn.
And then Jake is on the Auburn wins, Michigan covers then?
Correct.
We'll see how it goes. Let's start with the game we're going to see first with boots on the ground coming up on Friday night. The age-old rivalry between Kentucky and Tennessee. The Wildcats are 4.5-point underdogs to the Volunteers. The team total 144.5. Nick, for Friday.
I said half joke in the bracket show that I'd rather lose in the first round than lose to Tennessee in the Sweet 16. Again, half joking, but now that, first off, it's got to be back. Again, we're Kentucky. We're not celebrating Sweet 16s per se, but it just feels good to be back for first time.
Are you?
Okay, we're not hanging banners, okay? Florida boy. Nice Kentucky fridge, by the way, back there. Looks good on you, Jake.
That's anyway. Your fridge that you left at my apartment.
Thanks for fridge, though.
It is a good looking fridge.
Two fridges and one photo. Anyways, okay, so now that we're here, definitely a lot of anxiety because, again, it's Tennessee. As people heard me talk before, other than Louisville, maybe Duke, I hate them more than anyone. I don't want to lose to them. So that's my thoughts going to it. The game itself is interesting because Kentucky is 2-0 against Tennessee. So there's pros and cons about those 2-0s, okay? This is the healthiest Kentucky's been, okay, in the first game, okay? You got one combined minute from Lamont Butler and Andrew Carr. The second game, Lamont Butler played 22 minutes, and Jackson Robinson did not play, okay? So essentially, they're just missing Robinson this game, whereas the other game, they're missing 2 players, okay? So believe it or not, it's probably the healthiest going to be versus Tennessee. The con, however, in those 2 wins over Tennessee get this was 14 of 63 from 3 in those 2 games. That is 22% from 3 in those games. On top of that is the Milicic, I believe that's how you say it.
Yeah, Igor Milicic.
He was 7 of 12 in those games from 3. If you take him away, they were 7 of 51 from 3 in those 2 games. 14%, including 11 of 45 from 3 in the first game. Okay, so probably not going to have that happen again. That's very concerning, just a math thing. But Lamont's going to be healthy first game. We get Lamont versus Ziegler, LaMarche. Ziegler flipped off to Kentucky logo after the round 32 win against UCLA. I don't know if you saw that photo. We can post that later.
I did not see that. Wow.
It was so weird. It is very blatant too.
Oh yeah, he's straight just doing this. Imagine that TV is a Kentucky logo.
He's smiling at the camera and flipping it off.
Right in front of Jack Gibbons' photo too, by the way. So
okay,
I say all that to say, I'm excited. I'm nervous. Not sure what's gonna happen. Please don't lose Tennessee Sweet 16 with us in attendance.
Chaz Lanier is the key. It all comes down to him. If he's having a good game, he's gonna win.
Yeah, if he comes out like that Texas A&M game about a month ago, that's not a good look for Kentucky.
It rides and dies with him. The games that Tennessee has struggled recently are the games that he does not play well. When they especially – wow, he actually did. That's hilarious. Wow. Okay. So in their first game against Wofford, when they were kind of struggling in the first half, Chaz Lanier kind of started off slow. Then he started getting hot, and that's when they started to pull away. And they kind of did the same thing against UCLA. So I think Kentucky has to focus all their attention on slowing down Chaz Lanier. Let everyone else do what they want to. You can let Zakai Ziegler shoot 15 threes. That's fine with me. As long as you keep Chaz Lanier in check, that is Kentucky's course to win. That's how they win. They need to be able to hang with Tennessee on the boards. They can't get beaten by 10 to 15 offensive rebounds. You got to hold your own. Amari Williams has to continue to be that pest defensively. I like Kentucky a lot in this game. I'll be honest with you. I really like Kentucky. I think it's the mental part of it. I think they shoot well. And also, the last time Kentucky played at Lucas Oil Stadium with a team like this, they made it to the Final Four with Andrew Harrison making shots. So I think that Kentucky is going to find a way to pull this out. I don't know how, but I also want them to pull it out because I do not want to see Tennessee win, and I never want to see Tennessee win, and I hope they just continue with that.
Hey, Robbie, real quick. They've played in Lucas Oil since then.
I'm aware, yes. We're not talking about the other one. We're talking about the run that they made.
I didn't think about that, Jake.
Well, okay, no. So, you mentioned that was the entire Lucas Oil Stadium for that.
Oh, just the half.
This is just
curtain call. Curtain call cast.
So this is one half of Lucas Oil Stadium, much like that run that they had in the Final Four in 11, I believe it was, 14. When that happened. 14, sorry. I always do that. I don't know why I think it's 11, 14. No. Anyway, but yes. So, Dusty, how do we feel tonight then? Or Friday night, sorry.
First of all, Jeremy Pena with a web gym on the first play of the season. This is Tennessee and Kentucky's amazing 159th game against each other, which I think is just wild. It's Kentucky's most.
159th?
Yeah, I don't know if that's Tennessee's most or not. Kentucky leads all time 107-51. I've said this before. Because we've all played sports growing up, once the ball is tipped, no one's given a damn about being 2-0 or 0-2 against a team on the season. So I'm throwing that out the window. These teams know each other. These teams hate each other. There's no doubt about that. It's going to be a packed house. I would say probably 70% Kentucky, though, just because of how good that fan base is. Yeah. God bless Mark Pope paying for a student's gas last week, apparently, to get to Milwaukee. Apparently, that was a real thing.
Yep.
Awesome. I feel very good about it. I'll just say that. I'm going to go with Kentucky. I think they're proven to be better head-to-head against Tennessee. And this team is gelling very well. I told Nick this, take out that Bama game. They've actually looked really good without Jackson Robinson. Again, they finally were able to kind of have an identity, understand what their roster configuration looks like. I like them to win outright. I know the spread's, 5.5 or 6, somewhere in that range.
It's four, down it's to 4.5.
Kentucky, it's down to 4. So you can see where the public's leaning right now. I like the Cats. Go Big Blue, and hopefully we see the Boilers on Sunday.
Jake, Nick, what are our picks then? Jake, start with you.
Well, and also this real quick. If you would have asked me up until today, I would have said Tennessee rolls in this game. I went back and watched Kentucky play with Jackson Robinson yesterday, and I watched Kentucky play without Jackson Robinson. Just the sped up highlights that you find on YouTube. I thought for sure that was the guy in this team that was like there, you know, because as we know, March, you need the guy that can go get you a bucket. Nothing's working offensively. Nothing's working in motion. Nothing's looking easy. And you need a guy that can just go get that bucket for you.
and that was Jackson Robinson for this team. Since then, Kobe Brea has gone from a guy that I believe could, you know, be a starter on a top team to a guy that could be a starter on a title contender in the NBA now. He is a guy that has, one, when he puts the ball in the air, I am confident every single time it is going in. There is just a level of confidence and aura that, these guys on Kentucky, that these guys that are playing today and on this roster, they did not have in January when I watched them in Rupp Arena versus Florida. They did not have in December against Gonzaga. They're, and that's about an individual side. There is a, everyone is, you know, Robbie, I used the Purdue example. Robbie, Hummel goes down and all these other guys step up in their individual play. That is what these guys have done without Jackson Robinson. That doesn't even consider the fact that Kirk Carissa hasn't with his team since December anyways. So you have
addition by subtraction there.
Kirk Carissa? But I think there's also – there is a – in Kentucky fans, I'll let you answer this. Making the Sweet 16 going into the season, was that was considered a checkbox as, hey, we'll take that successful season, right?
Well, considering that 365 days ago they had one player on the roster.
Exactly.
And no coach.
So Kentucky is playing with no pressure. This Tennessee team has the entire state and all of that ugly, hideous orange fan base on their back saying we can't – there's a lot of pressure on the shoulders of Zakai Ziegler, of Chaz Lanier, of saying, okay, no one's ever been to a Final Four in this uniform. We got to do it. Well, now you got to go against Kentucky again, and you think that it's going to be easy, and it's not. So I have Kentucky covering this game. I'm hoping they win just because I hate Tennessee and I love my family, but I think regardless, it's going to be a hell of a matchup. And but Kentucky for sure is covering this game. And fuck, why don't we just do it? Go Cats. They're going to win this game.
Taking Kentucky to win.
I'm taking Kentucky to win. I think that's my third underdog I'm taking to win.
Yeah, I'm not giving my prediction yet. But one team has LaMarche Butler. The other team has Rick Barnes as their coach. So it's March.
A dying Rick Barnes. Have you seen him?
Actually, they look decent. There's other coaches.
He looks pretty good.
Trail.
Yeah, real quick, your thing about Sweet 16 is a check mark. Listen, Kentucky's the first team the last 20 years to make the Sweet 16 with zero returning points. So to me, this is I do not want to lose a Sweet 16 to Tennessee. Don't get it misconstrued, but this is a successful season no matter what happens this Friday night.
I would agree. All right, let's go to the final game of Friday, the last game of the Sweet 16. It's the mighty Purdue Boilermakers from West Lafayette, Indiana. They will take on the Houston Cougars. 10.09 p.m. approximate tip time. It's going to be 10:30 before this thing gets started.
10:48.
Yep, it's going to be a late one. Houston, an 8.5-point favorite. That is down from where it was at 9.5, so the line has come down just a touch. The team total has also come down. It's down to 131.5. I will leave my opinion for last. So, Nick, I guess I'll let you get it started. What do we think of this Purdue-Houston game?
To me, the story is not really a hot take anyone can say this, but it's Purdue's offense versus Houston's defense, right? Kind of each team's calling card, which one prevails. And to me, there's like specific matchups. They're not necessarily guarding each other, but like, again, each team has the point guard, right? Uzan for Houston, Brain Smith for Purdue, who prevails there. The two guard, LJ Cryer versus Fletcher Lawyer, which one performs better? TKR for Purdue and Juwan Roberts for Houston. Like, there's kind of like, again, not saying they're necessarily guarding each other, but it's kind of like these specific players for each team that, like, who wins those individual matchups I'm really looking for. And the two other things, I don't know if you just mean something or absolutely nothing. One, what's the home crowd advantage like, right? Purdue being or very close to campus. And two, again, I don't know if this means anything. Purdue played the first game of round 32 and then played the last game of Sweet 16. Does that rest matter?
Yeah.
At all? Zero? A lot? I have no idea. Those are all the kind of things I'm looking for in this game, Robbie.
I agree. Yeah, it's very, very odd how that all worked out. And they also played one of the first games in the round of 64, too. So
right.
Very strange how that kind of all worked out. Dusty, what do we think about this matchup?
Oh, man. He's been so good. My guess is their game plan is going to be just try to smother Braden Smith. This game's going to be on his shoulders. I've been saying that's a bad thing, like if he plays bad or whatever. But this is when to beat Houston, you need a very good point guard to play a very, very good game. And when he is mainly what seems like at times the only guy that can dribble for Purdue, if I'm Samson, I'm going to have every possession, switching everything, make sure there's guard. So I think it's a very hard matchup for Purdue, but know, it's a Sweet 16. They're here for a reason. They're four seeds for a reason. I think there obviously will be a good – probably I would think more Purdue than Houston fans. And I would think those other fan bases, if they need it, they're rooting for the upset. So could be very loud for Purdue. Houston's obviously playing hostile environments. But Braden Smith needs to – I'm not even saying he needs 30 points, but limited turnovers and getting people open.
Yeah, it's a tough spot because if Tennessee wins, they're in a weird position because they don't want to see Purdue because they always lose to Purdue in the tournament. And I don't think they really want to see Houston because Houston, I think, is a horrible matchup for them. So that's an odd place to be in if you're Tennessee, if you do end up winning your first game. So, Jake, what do we think about Purdue-Houston coming up Friday night?
I have one thing I want to say prior to this. And Robbie, this is not at you. This is at Purdue fan. I've never seen a fan base be so, one, mind blown at public information and pissed off about this game not being in Gainbridge Fieldhouse. The amount of people... Oh, I mean, I'm talking furious fans. Also, it's been public for 9 months. Actually, longer than that. It's been public since last year's Final Four.
They can't read and they don't have internet.
Wait, what Purdue fans are mad about this? I'm not.
Oh, it's. I've got.
I thought you said Tennessee fans. I'll take back Brandon's on Purdue.
I thought it was just a West Lafayette joke, not even a Purdue joke.
No, yeah, no, I thought this is an Amish West Lafayette joke.
Sorry.
Purdue fans being like, it's so stupid that blah, blah, blah. Again, Robbie, you may not be aware of this. I've gotten multiple Twitter arguments with it as well as group chats. You know who you are. But it's just mind blowing. First of all,
why does it matter? More, like more seats, that's better. That means more fans.
My point exactly.
Well, Jake, I'll see. It's not just been Purdue fans. I've seen a lot of people talk about this. And so, a lot of people point out, I don't know if it has any correlation. The state championship is won at Gainbridge. So I don't know if that has anything to do with this.
Yeah,
right?
it's always – the state finals are always regional weekend. Regional NCAA tournament regionals and state finals are always the same weekend.
I believe that is the exact reason why the games were at Lucas Oil, because of the high school basketball state championships.
But it's also been – that's where the regional has been – or that's where if Indy hosts a regional, it's been there anyway. What is Dusty doing?
Where's going on happening to Dusty?
Dusty, are you being attacked?
I muted him.
All right, anyway, back to the matchup, Jake.
I will say this. It has been a month of complaints from fans. Oh, my God, not able to display camera and mic. Dusty has fallen off the trail. Haley's about done with him. It's been a month of, you know, chalk, if you will. It's been a month of, or a couple, no, 2 weeks of no upsets, no close calls, no, oh, screw that. We are getting a Purdue battle on Friday night. They have the most rest. They have, I think those Kentucky fans will be cheering for Purdue over Houston. So they're going to have they're going to have the back of the fan base. And I think there is just going to be a little bit of edge that this team was not supposed to make it this far. And I'll tell you now, I didn't believe this team would make it this far either. I'm shocked that they're going into this game. But hey, while we're here, might as well make the best of it, right? And I think that Houston is looking forward to their Elite Eight matchup, and especially being game two, they're going to know who they play if they win this game in the Sweet 16. So they're going to be looking forward to that Elite Eight matchup, and Purdue is going to come out and shock them. And I think if there's anything that you can ever say about Purdue basketball, it is one thing and one thing only. Matt Painter will outcoach the best of the best. Matt Painter will game plan in a way that people are not expecting. And I do not necessarily think that he can get you throughout a regular season and domination. But when it comes to back against the wall, game on the line, Matt Painter is going to put these guys – he's going to throw Houston a side of defense and scheme and game plan that they have not seen once this year. It's not what worked best against Houston. It's what they're not expecting at all. And he's going to put Kelvin Sampson in a corner to try to adapt and put something in his team where I think Purdue has a chance to win this game.
That is probably the only way I think Purdue does win, is if they do something that Houston's not expecting. That's the only thing I could foresee. Purdue
full court press?
Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe they throw a zone. I don't know. But it's a bad matchup for Purdue. It really is. Houston's physicality, size, and length is not something that Purdue can handle. And if Purdue comes out and plays as physical as they have in their last two games, they will have a chance. The other thing they need to do,
Yeah.
Well, it's specifically what Braden Smith needs to do. He has to play composed, and he has to play off of 2 feet. He cannot get jumpy because Houston is going to blitz the ball every single ball screen. Houston's going to hedge and blitz every single one of them because they want to make Braden Smith uncomfortable. That is what Houston does. They take you out of what you do best. So the biggest things will be, can Braden Smith play composed? Can he play off of 2 feet? Can he keep the turnovers low? And can he and Trey Coffin Wren establish a good rhythm to start and feel comfortable and kind of get their feet underneath them? I just have a really bad feeling that Houston is going to blitz Purdue quickly and it's going to go out to 10-0, and that's where Purdue's in trouble. If Purdue can keep it close throughout, that's their best chance. They could, if they come physical, if they come prepared, if they show that they are ready to meet the challenge that Houston brings to the table, it's going to be a close game. But I've said it from the beginning. Purdue's been playing with house money since the start here. They were not – this is – the fact they've even made it to a Sweet 16 is an accomplishment in itself. And no IU fans were not going to hang a banner for making it to the Sweet 16. So shut up, okay? I think it's funny. It's fun, okay? But this is not the year for Purdue. I think I've said it about 30 times. Next year is the year. But putting themselves in a position like this – to get experience in this kind of an environment, in this kind of a high-pressure situation, is great, again, for a team still learning how to play without one of the best college basketball players that we've seen ever. So I still think Purdue is going to lose. I think Houston's going to win and cover. But I want Purdue to meet the challenge. I want them to be physical. I've been saying it since December that as long as they show up and they play physical and they play tough and play hard, that's all that I can ask for as a Purdue fan. So I'm excited to watch them. I'm really looking forward to seeing them play in the Sweet 16. Whatever happens, happens. But, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get a Kentucky-Purdue Elite Eight. You never know. Nick?
Robbie, I said, first of all, whether Kentucky wins or loses, I'll be cheering my heart out for Purdue right there with you, Robbie, as we're in attendance together. But I told you before we recorded, I'm glad you're the one playing Houston, not me, on Friday night. I don't see how they're not going to get out of Indy. I don't know. I guess I'm, you know, showing my hand for our next pod, but I think Houston's that good. I do think Purdue will cover. I think they'll battle. I think they'll fight. But Houston's combination of defense and offense this year, I think, is too much. I think Houston wins, but Purdue covers. And I just think Houston's that good, unfortunately.
I agree. I don't know how Purdue guards LJ Cryer, I'll be honest. He's not a matchup that Purdue sees very often. A guy who's kind of that diminutive figure that can step out and shoot threes from anywhere. They don't see that very often at that position. So, Jake, I already know he picked Purdue. Dusty, where do we pick with Purdue Houston?
I mean, those late games can have some weird results. I mean, you are asking teams to play at a later time than they used to. I mean, we saw that in Nashville when we watched Kentucky tip off against A&M at like 10:30 Central Time. So I do think there's an aspect to that. I do think there's an aspect to the home court advantage, which they'll have undoubtedly. It's kind of what I said about the Michigan State game. I don't think Purdue can let Houston jump out because that defense is so hard to come back against. Purdue got to be pumped to be back here. I do think Houston wins. I think Purdue covers, but yeah, I think Houston, like, I would be stunned if they don't get out of Indianapolis as well.
It is going to be a fantastic Sweet 16 of games on Thursday and Friday. Guys, anything else that I'm missing? Anything else you want to mention? Shout outs, last news of note, Nick Mills.
I'm going to do this at the top. I just want to do a couple of Sweet 16 nuggets really fast.
More nuggets.
Every year since 2012, we've had a 5 seed or worse make the Final Four, which, as chalky it is, that's still very possible. So there's at least 4 teams are left that are 5 seed or worse. And so shout to them. And there's 3 teams trying to make a back-to-back Elite Eight for the first time in school history. Your Boilers, Robbie, Tennessee, and Alabama. So those are Nick's nuggets of the day. I cannot wait. These are 8 great games for the next 2 days.
It's going to be awesome. Dusty, any last news? No, anything else I'm missing?
Nope. Pumped. This is probably my favorite round of the tournament. because of these amazing matchups that you don't really get during the regular season that you want to see. And, you know, most of the time Cinderella's go to die, and we don't even have any this year. So,
Johnny C.
I was going to say, that's offensive to John Calipari.
I would say he doesn't call himself a – no, he would just for the hype.
Yes, he would.
Yes, he would.
Yeah. Remember, Absolutely. Dusty, he said that they put him in the coffin but forgot to nail it in.
Was it Patino's? Was it Patino's coffin?
That's what he said, because I think at one point before the – I think it was actually before the Kentucky game, they had like a 0% chance of making the tournament. And then they went on that crazy run, and he said they put us in the coffin but forgot to add the nails.
So good.
Well, Rick Pitino sleeps in a coffin as a vampire, so yeah, that does make sense. That's it. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the D1 and Done Pod. We will have Boots on the Ground coming up on Friday evening from Lucas Oil Stadium, so we'll have all of us there cheering on the Kentucky Wildcats and Purdue Boilermakers, but should be a great weekend of hoops. Good luck to Jake Gators coming up tonight. We hope all of you enjoy the college hoops. We'll be back on Saturday previewing the Elite Eight. Enjoy the madness, y'all, and we will see you next time.
Please be Kentucky Purdue. Please. Next pod will be amazing.